Good morning, and thank you so much for tuning into the Chamberlink today. I'm Catherine Grinberg with the Fargo Moorhead West Fargo Chamber of Commerce and your host for today. And I'm really looking forward to this conversation with three leaders that I have in the room with me here in studio. Today's topic is a very complex challenge, I think we can all agree, and it shows up across our region in a variety of different ways. The topic today is homelessness that we're going to tackle, and really understanding the landscape of homelessness in our region, how it impacts workforce, public safety, overall vitality, and kind of just the society as a whole. So we're going to take a closer look kind of with the three leaders today of what it looks like here in our region and some of the coordinated efforts that they're each working on, which are truly impressive, if I can say so myself. And I've already highlighted with these three leaders that I am no expert, but I'm so thankful to have three experts in the room that can answer all of the questions. So with me today is, starting on the end, Chandler Esslinger with the Fargo Moorhead Coalition to End Homelessness, and Taylor Severson with the United Way of Cass Clay, and then Jan Eliason, with the Fargo Cass Public Health. So thank you all for joining me today. I appreciate you being here.
Yeah, great to be with you.
Yes. So let's just start by level setting by each of you telling a little bit about yourself, your organization, and kind of the piece you play within this puzzle of working on homelessness. And then I have plenty of follow-up questions that we'll go through and kind of talk further about the issue. So Chandler, let's start with you down there, if you would, please.
Yeah, absolutely. So like you said, I'm with the Fargo Moorhead Coalition to End Homelessness, and we have been in existence since 1989. And so homelessness is an issue that has been with our community for many years. Our mission is that we work in partnership to achieve permanent solutions to prevent and end homelessness. And so we're really the only nonprofit in our metro area that is laser focused on creating a system where we are preventing homelessness whenever possible, and we're moving people as quickly out of homelessness into permanent housing. We have over 70 members that make up our coalition partners across the metro and many others that interact with our work. And so, you know, we are really responsible for helping to coordinate all of that shared work to make sure we're seeing outcomes that are more than just the component parts.
I love that. And I'm glad that you highlighted that it's a nonprofit, because I know sometimes people assume that it's the governments that are just taking the lead. But really, I mean, you guys have stepped up a lot and have, like you said, over many, many years, and you continue to do great work. So thank you for what you're doing in our community, Chandler.
Yeah. And I think the coalition in partnership with the United Way are just a really good example of how when nonprofits come together, we can solve solutions, or we can come up with solutions that sometimes our government partners are just a little limited in being able to do. So,
perfect segue. Taylor, do you want to tell us about your role and the United Way's role in this?
Absolutely. United Way of Cass Clay has been in our community for almost 100 years. And there's this sentiment, where there is a need, there's a United Way. And United Ways look different all over the world, but we are truly built by and for our community. And so our focus in this region is making sure that we understand the complexities of life that lead to vulnerability and poverty. And so we're focused on things like preventing hunger and homelessness, preparing kids to succeed, making sure that kids have a great start in life, and we're also making sure that they can launch into adulthood with the right types of supports as they grow and learn. And finally, really focused on mental health access and disparities, as well as those barriers to good jobs, making sure that families who are struggling have all of those things to make sure that they can find opportunity. And so our United Way has been in great partnership with the FM Coalition to End Homelessness and many other community partners in understanding the root causes of the issues our community is facing, using data and the right people, leaders and experts in our community, to find solutions together.
That's great. I have some questions coming up about some of those things that cause homelessness. So we'll be back to that. Thank you. And then last but not least, on my right over here, Jan, can you tell a little bit about your role and Fargo Cass Public Health's role in homelessness?
Sure. So I was hired by the city of Fargo in 2008 to open the Gladys Ray Shelter, which was the first shelter in the community that was considered low threshold, low barrier, meaning that we really tried to eliminate some of the barriers that people were facing accessing other programs. Other programs in our community are great. They just weren't necessarily a good fit for the folks that we intend to serve in most of our programs. Fast forward to now, we became part of Fargo Cass Public Health, I believe, in 2014. And it was a really natural transition, I think, because everything that we do is related to public health, and these are public health issues when you start talking about homelessness and poverty and mental health and all behavioral health. So our role right now is to continue to provide low barrier, low threshold services at all of our in all of our programs, and the new resource and recovery center is just another example of that. We work really hard to connect with people who have been really kind of out on the fringes and haven't necessarily felt like the system itself was accessible or was interested in working with them. Of course, the system is, but we just have to work really hard and use a whole different approach to engaging with those folks and getting them to come through the doors and proving to them that we really can make a difference if they're willing to let us.
Mm. And you and your team have been very busy, I understand, with the ribbon cutting that just happened and all of the opening of the Resource and Recovery Center. So kudos to you guys for a lot of work that's gone into that. And I'm excited to dig a little bit more into what that center is and how it's serving our community. So to jump in a little bit more on the landscape, I think that's a good spot to start so that we can level set with listeners here. So Chandler, I'm going to start with you on this one, and then Taylor will talk about some of the leading causes. But Chandler, how would you describe that the current landscape of homelessness in our region?
So I think the first thing that people should just know is that we have a network of incredible providers who are working every day to serve our community members experiencing homelessness. And we have just an incredible variety of agencies that really specialize in specific populations of people experiencing homelessness. And so we're very lucky to have that diversity of resources in our community. Now, that being said, that we know that our system, this network of providers, is really overburdened. There are more people who are in need of services than there are resources to support them. So some of you may have heard in a recent report that nationally homelessness declined by a little bit last year. And that is a good sign, a good indicator in the right direction. But what we know here is that shelters are still at capacity every single night. We aren't able to work as upstream in homelessness prevention as we would like to really prevent that housing crisis. And so we are seeing a continued kind of increase in homelessness in our community. But the silver lining there is that, unlike other communities across the nation, our population of people experiencing homelessness is still relatively manageable. It's still relatively small. So with the right coordination, the right interventions, and the right support, not only from our agencies, but from partners who want to support their work, we can see a measurable decrease in homelessness over time.
That's great to hear. Taylor, when you think of the leading causes and you know, homelessness, I think, can look different all across our community, and it's people that are among us every single day that we maybe don't even realize. Can you talk about some of those leading causes and kind of how many people are homeless in our community?
Yeah, absolutely. I think we many people have an image of what they believe homelessness looks like, a certain person, a certain demographic group, maybe a certain age or gender or background. But the truth is that most of homelessness in our community is a little bit invisible. Most of the people experiencing homelessness today, like you mentioned, are people who are relying on friends or family members or neighbors to have a place to stay that night. They might be relying on one of those shelter partners that Chandler mentioned a moment ago. And they're not the image of what we assume homelessness looks like. And in our community right now, there are about 1,200 folks who are experiencing homelessness today. And as Chandler mentioned, that's still a really manageable amount or rate of homelessness, where we have the opportunity to start to see declines in that with more coordinated efforts. But just as unique as each individual is, so are the reasons that someone might be falling into homelessness. That can look as individual as mental health crisis, physical health crisis. The precarity of family economics right now mean that a car issue or a medical issue or some unexpected cost can really change the dynamic for a family who's really on the edge of being able to make it month to month. We know that across the nation, 60% of Americans have no more than $400 in savings. And so that means that crisis can impact families at any moment. And so there are a wide variety of reasons that someone might be experiencing homelessness, but the thing that unifies them all is that they do not have access to stable housing. And so as we think about our community solutions and the landscape of homelessness right now, It's making sure that there are appropriate, available, accessible, and affordable housing options that meet individual needs.
That makes a lot of sense. Thanks for some of those statistics, too. That's helpful to put it in perspective. And I think what you just talked about, both of you, Taylor and Chandler, of that homelessness doesn't always look like we assume it's going to. And if I'm right, Jan, I know that a lot of the services you guys provide are helping some of those immediate concerns. And so some of when you see homelessness, maybe downtown or some of the more visible areas that we've seen it, some of those immediate concerns that people have and that the support that you guys are providing. Can you talk a little bit about what group of homelessness is it that are seeking the services that you have? What are those immediate kind of concerns?
Sure. I think that it's not necessarily a group of folks that are unhoused. I do think that certain people gravitate toward our services just because of the way that we provide those. So we provide the building and the space and the staff to hopefully create opportunities for people to come in and meet with other agencies. We don't provide those. It's all community-based services that provide the actual services. Mm. We've created a space that feels safe, comfortable, and people can meet their immediate needs. Sometimes just that immediate needs piece alone is why people walk through the door. Excuse me. For example, laundry, showers, meals, and so on. And then we take advantage of that to build a relationship that hopefully leads to a path out of being unhoused.
Perfect. Well, I'm glad we started down that topic. We're going to take a break, but when we come back, we're going to talk more about that Resource and Recovery Center, what's all in there, what it means for our community. So stick with us. All right. Thanks for sticking with us. Catherine Grinberg here with the Chamber. You're listening to the Chamber Link, where we are tackling a big issue today of homelessness and learning a little bit more about it from some of the experts in the room. So I have with me Chandler, Taylor, and Jan, who are kind of sharing some of the data points and some of what they see as experts leading the charge for solutions to homelessness in our region. So thank you all for being here. When we left for the break, we were just starting to talk about the Resource and Recovery Center, Jan, and really wanted to dig a little bit more into that, since that's something that I think our community has questions about and just wants to better understand what it's solving and what it looks like. So can you talk a little bit more about overall what that Resource and Recovery Center is, the move to its new location? I understand that it just opened recently. Talk to us a little bit about that and the solution that it presents.
Sure. So what we do today, the model itself hasn't necessarily changed. Our approach has always been to create like a one-stop shop, essentially, so that people could, it's like that no wrong door approach to things, so they could walk through the door, meet up with services, some that they don't even know exist in the community, or some of the opportunities that they didn't know that they had either. excuse me. So moving to the new building has really allowed us to provide a much more predictable and safe environment. The building downtown was difficult simply because it was a lot of rooms, a lot of walls, a lot of hallways. We couldn't all see each other, and that doesn't necessarily feel predictable or safe for everybody walking through the door, especially when you're serving this population that has experienced so much trauma in their history. So the new space, we can all see each other. It's wide open. The guests that we're seeing so far have nothing but good things to say about it. And the providers as well. I think the providers feel more connected to us when they walk through the door, because they walk up to a reception desk. We have a schedule of rooms that different providers can go to. We also have providers who just drop in anytime they want. The only difference is we can't always guarantee them a meeting room, because we have all of those scheduled. We have a lot of providers coming in every day. We ask them to sign in. We ask how many people they met with, and we can make that information available. So ultimately, it's, you know, people face many, many barriers, right, while homeless, and we're just trying to reduce a few of those. Homelessness is a full-time job in this community. You know, we're really spread out, and when you're trying to get from downtown over to southeast, over to wherever else you're supposed to go to apply for a job, It really is a full-time job just meeting your own basic needs, much less trying to get out of your situation. I think that it feels pretty impossible at times.
Sure. Have you guys seen any barriers of getting from downtown with that movement now to getting those guests from downtown to your new space, or has it been pretty good?
It's been pretty good. Prior to the prior to the engagement center downtown, people were walking to get wherever it was that they needed to go, at least those folks that we were serving at Gladys Ray and in some of our other programs. So I have, you know, we do have some folks who have some physical limitations, and we do try to provide some assistance, whether it be bus passes or we have a shuttle that just runs a couple of times a day, not from downtown necessarily, but from other programs. Mm-hmm. So we do try to prevent or try to reduce the number of barriers people face just getting to us. Mm-hmm. There's a number of folks who haven't attempted to get to us yet, but I think that they will. I think our reputation has to be out there. That's how it's always worked with all of our programs. It's, you know, people have to go out and spread the word.
Yeah, absolutely.
Can I also just give like a quick big kudos to Jan and the City of Fargo and Fargo Cass Public Health? Because we mentioned earlier that it's difficult sometimes for our local governments to be the solution to every element of homelessness. Mm-hmm. But Jan, the Fargo Cass Public Health team, the City of Fargo play an essential role in our homelessness response system and a role that really no other provider in our community could fill. Mm-hmm. So we're incredibly grateful for their dedication to serving this population, for their ingenuity and the programs they bring to our community, and just for their relentless pursuit of serving people with dignity. And I just think it's really important to acknowledge that.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. That is great to acknowledge. I'm glad that you called that out. Jan, talk to us a little bit about the numbers that you're seeing in the Resource and Recovery Center, as well as what are those services? I think sometimes people just have questions of the here of this building, but you know, you clarified in the last segment that there's all these other service providers. It's not you guys just doing all the services. Who are some of those? Can you give any examples?
Sure. I think one of the providers that's really important to mention is Southeast Behavioral Health Center, formerly Southeast Human Service Center. They provide a number of services, and they're there almost every day. They have their own space to work from just so we can make sure that they have what they need to meet with people, whether it's somebody in crisis, so it was an unplanned visit, or whether it's some of those planned visits. We have a number of agencies coming throughout the week that involve legal services, care coordination, where people are helping connect people to the supports that they need outside of the center to get to move toward housing. We have, I said legal services, right? We have all kind of, we have benefits, folks come in. We have schools or education folks. It's an endless list. We do have other providers from other places. For example, if we have somebody who we think is pretty young and really needs to be accessing other services, we can call YouthWorks, we can call Stepping Stones, and they'll come in as needed. So some come in as needed, most come in as because they're scheduled or because they believe that's where their folks are that they need to meet with. That's what they say too, is it's really helped them find the folks that they're serving.
That's a wide variety of services. I guess I didn't realize all of that. So thanks for sharing. Chandler, you mentioned it as a system. I think that was an intentional word that you used there, of a system for this. Can you talk a little bit about how this all works together, that you might all be doing different pieces to the puzzle, but it all works together in one coordinated system?
Yeah, absolutely. And the Resource and Recovery Center is an essential kind of part of that system, a connector to all of the services people need in order to move out of homelessness. And so, yeah, we have a wide variety of service providers that serve individuals at risk of homelessness, who are currently experiencing homelessness, and then helping people stabilize in housing and prevent a return to homelessness. So that includes many of the same providers that Jan was just talking about, which is why the Resource and Recovery Center, I think, is such a good model. Those care coordinators are helping make pathways towards housing. We have our housing authorities who are creating those housing opportunities through vouchers, through buildings. We have our shelters who are keeping people safe and alive during their experience of homelessness. And we have many, many others that are interacting with and supporting people based on the other needs that they have, whether that's behavioral health, substance use, physical health, all of those things that can kind of keep someone trapped in the cycle of homelessness while they're really pursuing that permanent housing option. And so, you know, we have dozens of different service providers that make up that system. And I think one thing that we're really moving toward as a community is thinking about that system as housing focused. It's not just reacting to crisis. It's not just supporting people in crisis. It's moving people along that continuum towards a permanent place to live with the supports they need to live with dignity and stability for the long term.
Thank you. That's helpful. We're going to take a break, but when we come back, I want to stay on that topic a little bit longer and talk more about kind of this coordinated system and what efforts each of you are doing and how it plays together, as well as the business and economic impact for our listeners as well. So stay with us. All right. Welcome back to the Chamber Link. Thanks so much for joining us. I'm Catherine Grinberg with the Chamber. And today I have with us three guests that are talking about homelessness. So Jan, Taylor, and Chandler are here kind of talking about homelessness. And when we left off, we were talking a little bit about the system and how this all works together. And I think one thing that's so impressive is you guys all speaking today. It seems like you're all speaking kind of from the same book. You all understand what one another is doing and the coordination and how the handoffs take place. So much so that you would think you're all with the same organization and that you're all doing the same work, but you all have a piece to the puzzle, which I love. So I'd love for whoever wants to jump in and share a little bit maybe about how that works, how we get to this point of this coordinated effort where the right hand knows what the left hand is doing. So anyone want to jump in on that?
I'll start us off, and then I'd love to hand it over to Jan or Chandler. I think that there is this myth in our community that there aren't enough there's not enough coordination between organizations that are working to solve this problem, or that those organizations don't exist. But that's simply not true. And there's been a level of coordination because of the work of the FM Coalition to End Homelessness, because of the work that our community's done in the past to say Fargo-Cass Public Health has a role to play in this work, that there is a deep level of collaboration. And truly, organizations and individuals who work across these organizations consider themselves colleagues. They are, they have each other's cell phone numbers. They are making sure that clients are being best served, no matter where they're entering the system, that there is truly no wrong front door. And that's a really important thing that we have in our community that doesn't exist everywhere. So that's an incredible asset. And a couple of years ago, as our community was faced with growing challenges in capacity of the organizations that are serving folks experiencing homelessness or at risk of experiencing homelessness, we knew that we needed to come together and really double down on that level of coordination and understand which parts of our system were overburdened or overextended and which parts of our system were under-resourced. And as it turns out, this isn't a coordination issue. It's a system capacity issue. Mm-hmm. And that's something that's been really important for us to focus in on and also solution around.
Yeah, thank you for that, Taylor. I think, you know, just again, to your point, we have a diversity of service providers in our community who have these niche populations that they serve that really specialize in homelessness prevention, that specialize in youth, that specialize in families, that specialize in domestic violence, that specialize in chronic homelessness. And what we really needed to figure out is, because we do know we have this coordination, and to be totally honest, we don't have the luxury of not coordinating mm-hmm. because we are a cross-border community. It requires intense levels of collaboration in order for us to serve people the best way we know how. But at the end of the day, we know that we're seeing individual outcomes occur with people as they're moving out of homelessness and moving into housing, or perhaps that first step is moving into shelter or getting connected at the resource and recovery center. We know organizations are seeing outcomes. We know that they're housing people faster. We know that they are serving people the best they can. But how do we translate those things into community outcomes, things that are the average person who lives in our community can see and feel in terms of knowing their neighbors are living more stably, that there are fewer people living on the street, and that people are accessing the resources they need at the right time. And so, to Taylor's point, that's really a capacity issue. Again, making sure that all of that effort is creating a larger outcome. And that's where the partnership between the United Way and the coalition has really filled this void of ensuring that we all of the agencies and all of the supportive partners in this work have a plan that's kind of leading the charge and leading the vision. So you talk about, we all seem like we're maybe discussing from the same playbook. That's because we've been working on building this playbook for the last about year and a half. So we're nearly there and kind of unveiling that to the community. And a lot of it is going to be around, how do we just maximize the efforts that are already happening? How do we just minimize some of the barriers that our partners are facing, and just create a kind of a landscape where we can minimize some of those constraints on seeing success at scale?
Yeah, I'm glad that you mentioned that. I think that, you know, from the business perspective or the outside perspective, sometimes a complex issue like homelessness can seem like, wait, who's on first, right? Mm-hmm. Like, who's doing what? Are all the bases being covered? Are they being duplicated in the areas? So it's great to hear from the experts yourself that are working within this and coordinating those efforts, and that, you know, a capacity issue, we can tackle that if we have the coordination behind it. So that's really great to hear. And I can see why from the outside it looks complex, but when you jump into it, it sounds like this is a very coordinated effort. So I appreciate that. I think talking about coordination, public-private partnerships come up, and how we are working together across different lines. And Chandler, you even mentioned, you know, across different states, right? We're working in several counties and states and cities, and then government, nonprofits, private business. There's a lot of parties that are either impacted or in some way fit as part of the solution of homelessness. So how are we engaging all of those partners, and what does successful public-private partnership look like?
I'd love to start off by just saying that I think oftentimes we think about homelessness as an individual crisis. It is an individual person or an individual family, but it really is a community crisis. The existence of homelessness in our community harms every single one of us. It decreases our overall quality of life for every single person. And so when we work together, when we bring in those partners who maybe don't self-identify as having a role to play in homelessness, but are maybe concerned about it, or their storefront is downtown, or they're hosting a gathering in an area where we see more homelessness, we know that that has impacts, right? And so plugging people into the right place and saying, okay, if you care about this issue, if you care about it being better, or even if you just care about your bottom line, this is what's required in order for us to see change happen. And so plugging people into where they can have that impact. And so I think our public-private partnership that we have through the Cass-Clay Interagency Council on Homelessness is one of those really brilliant ways that we've brought that together. And whether you self-identify as somebody who has a role to play or doesn't, there is a role for you in managing and addressing this crisis. And that really, I think, has a lot to do with the just respect and the prestige and the work that United Way has done in developing those business relationships and the coalition together, bridging the gap between service provider partners and kind of the larger community stakeholders. And so I think we're a really good and successful example of that in the work we've done so far.
Yeah. The Interagency Council is something that is both novel and practiced across our nation. And it's novel because there's no other community that's having to grapple with or maybe accepting the challenge of grappling with this beautiful Red River that separates our community and the multiple municipalities and counties and states we work across. And that presents a really unique challenge. So we're working with over 70 organizations, business, civic leaders, nonprofit leaders, folks that are really well steeped in this work. And we all agree that we might have different reasons for wanting to address homelessness, but we agree that we have to work together to find those solutions and that we need to be, to use your words, reading from the same playbook and have the same strategies together. So the Interagency Council is this beautiful illustration of interagency councils working across the nation that bring together public-private partnerships and the novelty of being across our two states. And we've seen some great success, and we're really excited. Our next interagency council meeting is next week. And so Chandler and I have been busy preparing with our steering committee and the members to get ready for what's coming next.
That's great. It's a very impressive group. I've attended a couple of those meetings, and it's impressive, all the people that are around the table. And like you said, we might all have different reasons for being around the table, but we all have that same common goal of ways that we can find solutions to homelessness. Jan, anything to add on any of that? Otherwise, I want to talk a little bit about kind of how homelessness intersects with everything else, too, of public safety, workforce, everything.
Nothing to add on that. Those guys are great at covering every detail.
Okay, well, Jan,
they are.
Maybe
yeah.
I would just say, as somebody who has been in this work for many years, that there are many organizations, many yeah. leaders in our community who have dedicated their lives to getting yeah. us to where we are now, yeah. to a system that is built on this foundation of coordination. And it is only now, because of that work, that we are able to bring it to the next level. And that's because of people like Jan, because of many other leaders in our community. And so we really stand on their backs in terms of being able to be at this moment where we can set another goal for our community.
That's really great. That's awesome. Thank you for all your work, Jan, on this that you've done over the years, and also Fargo Cass Public Health and all the partners that you've engaged. I know that it's been a lot of work over the years that have gotten us to this point, like Chandler said. All right, I want to talk a little bit about how homelessness intersects, like I said, with workforce, public safety, healthcare, community vitality, just overall community competitiveness. You talked about the bottom line might be for some people, or their storefront, or whatever the reason being. How does homelessness impact a community? Why? What does that look like?
You know, I think that I'm only going to speak to a couple of those pieces because I know Chandler does a great job of that. When we start talking about downtown, for example, and the feelings that people have about the presence of homelessness downtown, you know, it's I guess if I could put any message out there, it's, you know, poverty and homelessness is a crisis situation, right? People are living in crisis. Crisis breeds desperation. And desperation really is what causes a lot of the behaviors and the disorder that we see, not just downtown, but in other parts of the community. Mm-hmm. The only way to address this is to work as a community to make sure people aren't just continuously living in this crisis that ultimately causes that desperate behavior in the first place.
Mm. I think the status quo is also extremely expensive. So you ask about public safety, you ask about workforce, you ask about all of these different things. If people don't have places to live and they are maybe in a desperate situation that's causing community disruption, those are police resources that are oftentimes going towards responding to that, or an ambulance ride that's responding to that. Things that we could much better address when somebody is in the safety and security of housing and connected to the right proper resources. So the status quo is really expensive. We also know that in the crisis of homelessness, people have a difficulty just maintaining daily life, right? All the things you and I need in order to get out of bed in the morning, take a shower, go to work. People just don't have access to those things. So we're also missing out on oftentimes a very skilled number of people who are not existing in the workforce in the capacity that they could. And so those are also, I think, just economic impacts to our community. And we also know if you look across the nation, communities that have high rates of homelessness are seeing challenges with tourism, with all of these other things. And what I would just remind people is that although we are struggling with this crisis here in our community, it is not out of grasp for us to address it. And it is far less serious than what we are seeing in other countries. So let's take that opportunity as a call to action instead of to say, oh, let's just wait in the wings until it gets worse. We want to act now and activate on that future for our community where we are seeing that vitality.
I love that. I love ending a segment on a positive, hopeful note, Chandler. So let's end it there and we'll come back for one last segment where we talk a little bit about what success looks like in the next 2 to 3 years and where we're headed. Thanks for sticking with us. Welcome back to the Chamberlink, where we are discussing the issue of homelessness today. I've had 3 great guests on that we've dug into a lot of the different areas, from the landscape to some of the services provided, and really the coordination of efforts all across our community, public, private, both states. Really incredible, all the work that's being done in our community. When we left off, we were just talking a little bit about the business impact and kind of that case for why solving homelessness and how it's different for everybody, but it impacts the whole community, and that the status quo is expensive and it doesn't work. We need to do something and move forward. But you left us with a note of hope, Chandler, which I appreciate, of that we can do something still and there's more work to be done. But we have the system, we have the coordination. It's just the capacity and working through it together. And I think from the chamber's perspective, you know, we come to the table with this issue not as a leader in homelessness efforts for solutions, rather a support in what that function we can bring from the business community and what we hear from our business partners, making sure and opening the conversation like today for our business partners across the community that have questions and want to better understand how to plug in. And we see the impact daily, right? Like you said, Chandler, in loss of workforce, in the community vitality, in visitors, especially in some of those areas where we see it more visibly of homelessness, and then some of what materializes from that. So there is a great concern, and the chamber, you know, stands ready to help, especially in the policy arena where we've really plugged into the issue and bringing that business voice forward. But as we look to kind of the future and how we can be supportive as business community partners, the individual businesses in our community and what success looks like, I want to leave us in the next 6 minutes or so that we have together talking a little bit about the future. So from each of you that I have with us, Jan and Chandler, I know Taylor had to take off for her next meeting, but can we talk a little bit about what meaningful progress would look like? What is kind of the next 2 to 3 years? And then what is it going to take to get there? Who wants to start with that one? Chandler, you ready?
Sure. Or I think
there we go. We got you now.
Okay,
we got you.
Sorry.
You start us off 2 to 3 years from now.
Yeah. Well, I think the biggest thing is that we're already well kind of on our way. And if people are just interested in getting more plugged in, like, please attend the chamber events that are dedicated to talking about homelessness. Come with your questions. We want to answer. We want to be transparent. Really, the community has not had a guiding, unifying plan to prevent and end homelessness since 2018. So it's been almost 10 years since we've had a unifying plan about what are we trying to accomplish? What are those measurable goals that we're trying to reach? And again, is all of this work adding up to something bigger? And so that really has been the work of the Cass-Clay Interagency Council on Homelessness, is developing that plan. We're really, really close to kind of unveiling that to the community this fall. And so I think for me,
This looks like having some of those business partners who have been stakeholders in this conversation find their way to plug in. And that can be just becoming educated. It can be about, you know, supporting their employees in getting involved in the work of addressing homelessness through volunteering. And it also looks like how do we kind of change the conditions under which our service provider partners are being asked to solve this crisis? Because our service provider partners alone can only do as much as their capacity allows. We've talked about capacity a lot today. And so for me, and what I can say without giving too much away about where I know we're going is we need a measurable target that all of us are rallying around and rallying toward. And I have a really good idea of what that number is. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking forward to being able to share that with the community. But without that, it's really difficult to see whether or not we're making progress. And so in 2 to 3 years, I hope that we'll have hit this target that we'll be sharing soon. And maybe even blown past it because of how much we've rallied around this issue and leveraged all of these stakeholders to see a meaningful impact on homelessness.
That's great. And you mentioned a measurable target, not to push you to give too much away, but when can we expect to hear about that as a community?
You can expect to hear about it probably in October.
Okay.
Our CASCLAY Interagency Council members are vetting that proposal at our meeting next week, and then we'll be setting some specific goals and indicators around that goal. But we've got a specific number in mind, and it would fundamentally, I think, change the way our community looks and feels, and it would allow our partners to do the good work they're doing every day without as much stress on their system so that they can show up better for those they're serving.
Awesome. Well, then we'll circle back to having you here in the fall again when you're ready to share those numbers and we can push that out to the community as well. Jan, going over to you here, what are your thoughts on meaningful progress in the next 2 to 3 years in your realm of the work that you do with homelessness, and how do we get there?
Sure. Well, I would echo everything that Chandler just said. I think that another part of that would be what the conversation around homelessness sounds like in our community. Right now, it's sometimes it feeds the negative ideas that people have about people who are unhoused. And I can see why that happens. I see why businesses downtown are frustrated, not only with behavior, sometimes it seems to just go unaddressed, but also because of the representation of downtown and the rest of the community. You know, it's perception is reality. People keep talking about. So I believe the conversation has to change. I think everybody in the community, when you guys talked earlier about everybody pays the price when we don't do something, and doing nothing is costing our community a ton, or doing mm-hmm. not doing more is costing our community a ton. So I think that people are as a community member, be responsible for your own education. Go out and find out the information. Find out what you can do to make a difference. It's not always, you know, we're not always asking everybody for money. Sometimes we're asking people for time. Sometimes we're asking for people for ideas or other resources. Everybody has a role to play. Everybody. And in 2 to 3 years, I hope that that's exactly what it looks like, is a community who's come together to make change happen.
On that note, I've learned a ton just in this conversation. I know I'm not the expert at the table here, rather moderating the conversation, and I've taken a ton of notes already about what you've each shared. So thank you for your time in that, and taking the time to share with our community some of, you know, whether it's the demystifying some of the things that we hear, or just clarifying things and sharing more about where we're headed, what the issue actually looks like. It's really helpful to have you all so accessible and willing to share more about the issue. We have about 30 seconds left, so any final takeaways that you want for our listeners today? 10 seconds, Chandler, what do you got? Last comments.
Okay, let's just go with, get involved, get educated, and stay positive. We have an incredible community. And we can achieve incredible things when we work together. And I am so excited for the work that's ahead.
That's awesome. Jan, 10, 15 seconds. What do you got?
Call your favorite organizations and ask them what you can do that's different than what you've done in the past. We always need more. And again, it's just the education and conversation piece. Go home and have conversations with people and hopefully change how they think as well.
I don't know that I've ever had guests that actually stick to the 10 to 15 seconds. So thank you both for being here. Thanks so much for sharing. We appreciate having you all three on. Chandler, Taylor, Jan, thanks for all the work that you're doing in this space. And as they said, stay involved, stay engaged. The Chamber will have more resources to do so, and look to your favorite partners that are working in this and figure out ways to help them. So join us in a couple weeks again as we come back on July 21st to talk about healthcare and explore the landscape of healthcare in our community. Thanks for being here. Have a great day.